The following is a presentation of Morning Drive Media and the Wrestling Viewpoint Network. Welcome back to the Wrestling Viewpoint Network. I'm Cad Knapsack. Here we are again. We've been presenting the California Classic Wrestling Podcast, but as I've said, the Wrestling Viewpoint Network is in a network of very different shows across the board of pro wrestling. We're going to look into the past, we're going to look into the present day, and we have with us now our Wrestling Viewpoint Network WWE/F Attitude Era expert, Joe Lester Talbot Ruggiero. Fresh off a four-year run in Millennium Pro Wrestling as manager and also a wrestling journalist, Lester Talbot. That was the genesis of the character, right?
Yeah. I went from a dirt sheet rider to just full-fledged jerk face and getting hit with a kendo stick by my dear friend Ken.
That guy must have been a jerk that did that to you.
He was, but I deserved it because I did it to him first.
But your last year in Millennium Pro Wrestling was pretty exciting. You got to manage Terex, one of the biggest powerful wrestlers on the Southern California scene, and Topher Cash and Mario Banks for a while. And anyone else in your stable that I'm forgetting during that time?
No, I sort of pseudo-managed J.J. Steele once or twice, and I managed him for the last show. But no, it was mostly Terex and then Topher and Mario until they beat me up.
And you got to work with, for I think only one or two shows, but a great up-and-coming female wrestler, Hudson Envy.
Yes, she was my bodyguard once.
And Millennium Pro Wrestling was going to have kind of that story play out, but then kind of things changed, and they have shut their doors for now. But I hear rumors that they'll be back in some form or another later on, and maybe you can seek revenge on the man who took you out.
I sure would
on
like
the final
to.
Show.
I'd be good. I'd be happy to renew that rivalry.
But enough about Millennium Pro Wrestling. We're here to focus on the Attitude Era, perhaps one of the most influential, controversial, and talked about eras of professional wrestling. This is the first of a four-part series. Again, if you're here for California Classic Wrestling, I appreciate you. That will be coming up. Me and Dan Farron have some other issues. I would say issues because I read so many comic books now, thanks to you, Joe.
Yeah.
Another episode of California Classic Wrestling is in the works. We've had some scheduling conflicts, and I apologize. But here, this is all about the Attitude Era. We are going to dive in and take a look at this era. And for me, it's interesting because I was there at the beginning, and then I kind of drifted off. I was not a giant fan, but I wouldn't say I was against it. I just kind of had life change, and I kind of had – I think we all go through those periods as pro wrestling fans where you just kind of slip out of watching it on a regular basis.
Yeah.
And then one day it enters back in your life.
I'm kind of in the middle of that one of those eras right now. I've been watching about a month and a half, and
a Damian Sandwat? You're like, you're not there. It happens. And for me, I had moved to LA during the height of the Attitude Era, and I just wasn't watching as much. And so I missed a lot of it. But I recognize its power. I also think the Attitude Era spawned some negative things that maybe has held back the wrestling industry or maybe took it down a path we didn't want it to go down as fans. But that's what we're going to talk about here in a retrospective and a history. And as always, follow us on Twitter, WrestlingVN. That's a Wrestling Viewpoint Network's Twitter feed, at WrestlingVN. And you can email us at WrestlingViewpoint@gmail.com and find us on Facebook, Wrestling Viewpoint Network. We're just starting up, and let's dive on into the Attitude Era, Joe. Well, let's go before it started.
Yeah.
Well, I think a lot of people... Set the stage a little bit. Take us through the times right before that golden age.
Right before the golden age, things were a little down for the WWF. I know today it's a WWE. I'm going to call it the WWF.
Yeah. The lawsuit's been settled.
Yeah, exactly.
It's over.
Yeah. They don't have to blur it out anymore, so I'm going for it.
Yeah.
The Hulkamania madness of all that.
It had run wild.
It had run wild, and then people were just kind of tired of it running. Hogan had departed for greener pastures, as they say, in WCW, as had mainstays like Randy Savage, Ric Flair. Mm-hmm. Well, Flair went back.
Yeah.
So Vince McMahon was kind of rebranding things. Also, he had gone through the PR nightmare of a well-publicized steroid trial where he was charged with providing his guys with steroids and
Shocker.
I know. Can you believe it?
So exonerated for all intents and purposes.
It was. Yeah. You know. Actually, thanks to Hulk Hogan.
Right.
Oddly enough. But so WWF was kind of changing, rebranding itself, and they right before the Attitude Era, that time is called the New Generation.
The New Generation.
Yes, the young up and comers.
Does that, outside of Star Trek, does that ever really work anywhere?
No.
No, it really doesn't. It worked to a certain degree. You had great guys back, when you go look at the top stars of that era, you're talking about Bret the Hitman Hart, one of the greatest of all time, HBK Shawn Michaels, The Undertaker. You also had Diesel, Kevin Nash. He held the WWF title for about a year.
Yeah, and he gets a lot of times you look at that reign, as I've heard people say negative comments about that reign.
I lived
that era. I watched that Royal Rumble that he threw like 11 guys out.
Oh, it was amazing.
And we were cheering at the top of our lungs.
Oh, yeah.
So flash forward to a couple years ago when Nash showed up at the Rumble as Diesel. That was a markout moment for me, without a doubt. So the New Generation had some pluses.
Yeah, no, it definitely had some pluses. You saw the rise of Mr. Perfect. He'd been around for a while, but he really kind of hit his prime there. You had Razor Ramon, Mr. Scott Hall, before.
Which worked out remarkably well for being such a gimmicky gimmick.
Yeah, for being such a terribly, hey, we saw Scarface 2 type of guy, he pulled it off really well. And he had some great matches with HBK. So certainly the talent level was there, but, we weren't talking about the heights of WrestleMania 3 again, or WrestleMania 6. We were in WrestleMania 11 territory, which
are hard. They had some good moments. And WrestleMania 10, I think, is an underrated WrestleMania.
WrestleMania 10 is very good. I like this.
Love that. The Owen Bret match, Crush Macho.
Absolutely.
A lot of good stuff there. But yeah, when you get Mantar and Adam Bomb and Damian Demento and Max Moon, that failed experiment from Conan's character.
There was a lot of things where you just kind of looked and went, that swing and miss.
Time had kind of passed.
There was the gobbledygooker. Don't forget that.
Yeah. I think the time, the expansion and the destruction of the territories and McMahon taking over in 85 through 90, he everything he touched was gold, it seemed.
Yes.
And as it happens, sometimes you kind of go to the well one too many times, and the times had started to change.
Yeah, Hogan. It basically does come from Hogan. He had his run of however long on top, and they hadn't necessarily groomed as many future stars as perhaps they needed, and just things are cyclical. That's the old saying anyway, it comes.
That's what they say in wrestling. That's what every promoter says.
Yeah. It's all cyclical.
Wrestling goes in cycles.
Yeah.
That's why I have 20 people at this gym here tonight.
Exactly. Yeah. It'll pick up someday. Trust me. Things were all right, not great. And then things were starting to get a bit dire when WCW things really started to pick up in about 95 when WCW debuted Monday Nitro. In direct opposition of Monday Night Raw.
Right. In the Mall of America. I remember that show greatly.
And had Lex Luger showing up as a surprise after appearing on a WWF pay-per-view the night before.
Right.
That was game changer.
Absolutely.
And began the much heralded Monday Night Wars, which could be a whole other show.
And this is, looking back, Hogan left WWF in 94, I believe.
Yeah.
After losing to Yokozuna and all that thing.
After WrestleMania 9, he was around for about a month.
Right.
He dropped the title to Yoko about a month later, and then he was gone.
The infamous WrestleMania 9 main event swerve.
Yeah.
So he leaves and agrees to drop it to Yoko, and he went to WCW as Hulk Hogan.
Yes,
and by that time it was kind of not working anymore.
Yeah, no, he kind of got there, and everyone was like, "Wow, it's Hulk Hogan!"
Yeah,
and for a while, good 6-7 months, everyone was really excited to have Hulk Hogan there, and then it's like, "Well, he's still doing the same thing,"
right?
And they were just getting tired of the red and yellow,
right?
And And, you know, there was the Dungeon of Doom storyline, which is just
god-awful. Yeah, a lot of stuff was in WCW at that time. Again, that's a whole separate
show.
The coal miners glove mask match with Roberts and Sting.
For all the faults that WWF had, it's not like WCW was pure gold.
They didn't have a midget dressed as a shark chasing Sting and Bulldog down a beach.
No, they did not.
That's what WCW did.
Yeah, so, you know, WCW hadn't quite struck gold yet, but 1996 is when things really started turning in WCW's favor. Yeah. The aforementioned Razor Ramon, Scott Hall, and Kevin Nash, also known as Diesel, had jumped ship. Mm-hmm. Their contracts were up in WWF. They went to WCW. They showed up on Monday Nitro, and people lost their minds.
Changed the game.
Yeah, because I remember as somebody... You know, I certainly wasn't the quote unquote smart fan that I am today. You know, I didn't have
you weren't the Wrestling Viewpoint Network expert.
No, I was not the Attitude Era expert that I am now.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't reading any sheets. There wasn't much of an internet that, you know, so all I knew was what I was seeing on my TV. So all of a sudden Diesel shows up on WCW Nitro and is fighting with Ric Flair, and I'm just like, oh my God.
Right, right. When Scott Hall comes out of the crowd dressed in denim, head to toe, by the way.
Yes.
It was mind bending.
Yeah, I was like, what's happening here? And it was crazy. And, you know, the way they played it, and it kind of worked, is that you thought, oh my God, WWF is invading WCW.
Right.
Which, you know, obviously now we all know it wasn't, but it was seriously like, how are these guys here? And now they're going by their real names, and this is all, it was one of those great moments where you're not sure how much of what you're seeing is real and how much isn't, which is when wrestling's at its best.
At its best, and certainly not the first time that's been done in the world of pro wrestling, but I think the first time on that level, to that degree, where things were that directly acknowledged.
Yeah.
So it was intriguing. As fans, you immediately stopped.
Yeah. You really wanted to see where it was going to go next, and where it went next was the most mind-blowing event of all time, Bash at the Beach, 1996.
Right.
Hulk Hogan seems like he's coming down to the ring to save the day.
Right.
Turns on WCW, turns heel. The great Hulk Hogan turns heel, and that is when the NWO storyline starts, and WCW just starts...
Explodes.
Just explodes and starts beating the crap out of WWF.
I think one of the greatest and smartest moves ever in pro wrestling history by Hogan and the peeps there, turning him heel.
Absolutely. Because, I mean, if they didn't, he would have been done in... Yeah. I mean, he basically was done, really, because no one was buying it anyway. But, you know, maybe he could have shown up one or a few more times and be like, hey, you're right, but no one would have cared. Turning heel when he did revitalize his career. He was once again the top guy in the industry. I mean, it was absolutely brilliant. It was executed flawlessly for... the most at the beginning. A whole other thing.
A whole other show. We'll get to the Latino World Order.
But, oh, dear God. Yes.
And that pretty much, that just turns the tide.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe not on a dime, but kind of. I mean, it happened quickly.
Yeah, no, it was a game changer. And it, you know, pretty much the whole industry and fans stood up and was like, okay, well, I want to see what they're doing.
Monday Night Raw been going for about 3 years at this point.
Yeah, Raw.
It was cool at first. It was this little venue, and occasionally things happen. Jannetty beat Michaels for the IC title or stuff like that, or the Flair perfect match, the retirement match, getting Flair out of WWF, Heenan kind of getting tossed out.
Yeah.
But it was missing something by that point.
It was. And it had two things going against him. One, that WCW was doing so well, and two, that a lot of it was still pre-taped.
Yes.
They were, you know, they were kind of doing like they do SmackDown now, where they tape it, and, you know, but they would do, when it was still just an hour long, they tape 2-3 weeks at the same time. And another brilliant, although slightly jerk face move on WCW's part, is they would open their broadcast and tell you what happened on Raw and say, well, you don't need to watch that now, so let's see what we're doing.
Let's stay with us.
Yeah, and people did.
And it stuck around. It worked up until, again, Shivani talks about Foley winning the title. But that's years down the line.
Yeah, that's way down the line. You know, it there was a good 2 years or so where WCW was just stomping on him.
Right.
And 96 was, you know, that was the year WCW took off. Mm-hmm. It may or may not have been the year that the Attitude Era began. You know, well,
let's transition into the Attitude Era's beginning, the official Well, I guess there's no real official.
Yeah.
One thing I always say from the outside looking in is what I liked about the Attitude Era is it wasn't like the new generation where Vince kind of knew, well, we have to sit down and go a different, let's market this. Let's the new generation. Let's get some new guys in here.
A lot of the good stuff that happened in the Attitude Era happened completely by accident.
Right.
It was stuff that just wasn't supposed to work or was supposed to work in a different way. Or really, they didn't really know what was going to happen. They were just like, here, go do this.
The term creative was not something you heard back then.
Yeah, no.
Creative has nothing for you. Didn't exist back then. Mm-hmm. It was just Pat Patterson hasn't booked you tonight or something. I don't know. Yeah. But here's the beginnings. Let's just throw those out. We can work our way back. Austin 316.
Yeah.
Montreal Screwjob.
Yep.
And the formation of D-Generation X.
Yeah. Or WrestleMania 14.
Or WrestleMania 14. Okay. Yeah,
those are the main candidates.
Can you pinpoint it to a moment in your mind? Where do you think?
In my mind, it's a toss up between the Montreal Screwjob or WrestleMania 14.
Okay.
Or maybe 13, but probably 14. Simply because it's something that, I mean, the screw job certainly was not, it wasn't strict wrestling booking.
Right.
You know, but just that's kind of when they really started to kind of adapt this chip on their shoulder. And, it's when one of the strengths of the NWO storyline and WCW as a whole is that you really didn't know what the hell was going to happen next.
Right.
WWF had kind of gotten stale and predictable. Certainly the screw job, although there was also a time before that where Brett lost a title match to Psycho Sid on Raw is a steel cage match. And then he got on the mic and went on this filthy rant against Vince McMahon, who was sort of, but not really quite openly as the owner.
Right.
And, you know, so this was another thing where the lines blurred a bit and people were like, what's going on? And, you know, and we can't discredit the importance of Austin's 316. I mean, we'll go into that in full detail
in
soon.
A second here. Yeah. That's the thing to point out too, is growing up, the internet and dirt sheets and all that stuff, all the access we have to the back, and again, I put quotations around the word access because 90% of what's thrown out there on the internet's probably totally not true, and the other 10% is an exaggeration, maybe.
Yeah.
But back then, I remember what you're talking about with Hart and Sid and Bret Hart talking, and you were kind of like, wait, isn't that Vince guy's the owner, isn't he?
Yeah.
I've heard that he's the owner, right?
Yeah. I'm like, he's yelling at, like, you're not supposed to be able to do that to your boss, right?
Right. Because as a kid, when we're watching this from my you know, I started watching wrestling in 85. I was about 8, 9, 10 years old. I wasn't there really for the territories. Didn't know that who Vince Jr. was. I barely knew who Vincent, Sr. was.
I had no idea who Vince
Right, and that so yeah. that so that's another thing to remember when we're looking back on this era, is the walls were still up.
Yeah,
yeah, there's a lot of old timers, and I know people, Dan Farron and those guys talking. They knew who he was.
Yeah,
I didn't know that information wasn't readily available. So when Brett starts what we know now as shooting or work shoot or whatever these terms you want to use, it was like, wow, what just happened?
Yeah,
what did I see?
Yeah, no, when this was. This is all happening 96, 97. That's junior, senior year of high school. You know, I know pro wrestling is booked, you know, quote unquote, fake, whatever. I know there's a level of
sports entertainment.
Yes. You know, so I know that not everything I'm seeing, but these are those moments where you're kind of in the back of your head going, I don't know that they planned this, you know?
Right.
And which are my favorites. Those are my favorite moments where I'm just like, I don't know that this is supposed to be happening.
Which is, I think, one of the great things about the beginning of the Attitude Era. It all seemed kind of unplanned. I'm sure, obviously, there was some planning that went into it, but the Austin 316 moment was...
Yeah, that was off the
cuff.
A great
promo.
Caught
fire.
It's an amazing promo. Mm-hmm. It's one of the... And, I mean, you could very easily make an argument that that's when... The Attitude Era officially began, because that's when his real rise sure. to stardom as the top dude really began. The only reason I would maybe go with WrestleMania 14 mm-hmm. as the official, put the stamp on it. That's the beginning. Is the Attitude Era is so closely identified with Stone Cold Steve Austin. I mean, if you had to pick sure. one guy out of that to really typify it, it's him.
Right.
And that was after that was they started using the Scratch logo pretty much right after WrestleMania right. 14. That was the show that closed with Jim Ross losing his mind, going, "The Austin Era has begun."
Right.
So that if you put a gun to my head, I would probably pick WrestleMania 14 with okay. a slight.
We'll do that right now.
Put it away, Ken. With a close second, Austin 3:16. But really, any of those could be.
But let's dive into these different quote unquote beginnings. The Austin 3:16 one happened in King of the Ring 1996.
King of the Ring 1996.
Now, the Montreal Screwjob happened in November of 97,
yes.
Survivor Series. So mm-hmm. that's a lot of time, over a year.
Yeah.
So between that time, Austin does that and, goes from that, stunning Steve Austin to mm-hmm. he's called the Ringmaster to what is this? yeah. And it was brought a new energy that had not been seen in the WWF for years. Since maybe Piper at his peak, I think. So it was such an organic moment. Do you really think that's when it started to build?
I think it's because again, if you're going to identify the Attitude Era with one guy, it's going to be Stone Cold Steve sure. Austin. And if you're going to point to one specific moment that put him on the map, that that mm-hmm. really said, "Hello world, here I am." That's Austin 3:16. I mean, it's that promo.
Right.
It's not even any of the matches. It's a 20, 30 second promo. At right. the end of a pay-per-view, and it just it's again a Kane, certainly not on the level quite yet of Hogan turning mm-hmm. heel, but it was really something that kind of got everybody to stand right. up. If you go back and you look, because he was a heel when this happened.
Yeah, absolutely. Roberts was coming back as the born again Christian, drinking Roberts.
Roberts was the grizzled vet that everyone right. was pulling for to make good on his second chance.
Yeah.
And here's this rude Stone Cold Steve Austin who seemed to want to just fight everybody. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And he was sort of slowly starting to get that cool, you alluded to Piper.
Yeah.
Slowly starting to get that cool heel, like, I know he's a bad guy, but he's totally cool response right. from the crowd. But he was still mostly booed.
Yeah.
And, if you watch the match, you watch the event, you watch him walking to the podium to talk to Doc Hendricks.
Michael Hayes in his short hair, mustache era.
Yeah. And he's walking up to, the fans are not happy.
Yeah.
They're mad. There's booing. People are looking at Jake Roberts getting carried out. And like, oh, man, he almost got it. And Austin starts talking. He starts insulting him and says, "Get that piece of crap out of my ring," and the place is just booing and booing. And then he gets to that line where he says, you talk about your psalm, talk about John 3:16. Austin 3:16 says, "I just whooped your ass," and the place goes nuts.
Right. Just turns on a dime. Yeah,
it's like a beat, and then just, whoa! I was like, that is cool.
It was unlike anything we'd seen on the WWF level for a while. Now, an interesting note about Austin. Let's go a little bit into Austin.
Mm-hmm.
I was first exposed to him in an early WCW days. Yeah. Stunning Steve Austin, the Hollywood Blondes. He worked before in Texas a lot.
USWA.
Was a great grappler. I mean, mm-hmm. he was a technician.
Yeah.
Had the long hair, the locks. He was a pretty boy. And all of a sudden, he's gone from WCW. Again, back then, we didn't know what was happening. We didn't know it was injuries and drama and intrigue and all this stuff.
We know he got reemerges by FedEx.
Right. Reemerges into ECW. And I'm mm-hmm. so glad now that you can see the stuff he did there. Because I remember hearing about it or seeing about it.
Yeah.
I don't know how it even... the tapes or something would come my way.
Yeah, it was kind of urban, ECW as a whole was kind of that urban legend right. thing where people were like, no, you need to hear about this thing. Like,
right.
That guy, Steve Austin, he was the Hollywood Blonde. Well, he just did this thing with bongo drums and Eric Bischoff, and it was amazing.
Shows up to ECW through his old connections with Paul E. Dangerously.
Yes,
the Dangerous Alliance
He was the original Paul Heyman guy.
Mm-hmm. He was, and he shows up and just starts doing a series of great promos, just again, what we now know as shooting or work shoots, mm-hmm. Just tearing down the rest of the industry.
Yeah.
Just, in a way that was like so strikingly fresh, but again, not a lot of people saw it.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad now you can watch the documentary that WWE put out, and that stuff's in there.
Yeah, it's a great documentary.
Yeah,
that they did. But yeah, and he, you know, his Monday NyQuil, and you know, he does one where he's kind of dressed up like Hulk Hogan. And, you know, and
yep.
then and ripping that, and he even, you know, he's in a couple matches again. He lost to Mikey Whipwreck at November to Remember, and then a three way ladder match, I think, with Sandman and Whipwreck for the title. So yeah, but yeah, I mean, he was only there, I think, like 6 months.
Yeah, it was a short while, but he taps into that attitude. He taps into that side of himself, which is so clearly him.
Yeah.
And the Stunning Steve wasn't, you know, necessarily, I'm talking in a global level here. He taps into his attitude and shows up on Raw.
Yeah,
as the ringmaster
is part of the $1 million corporation, and it was a little weird. It was a bit of an auspicious mm-hmm. beginning, because you know, he kind of, you know, DiBiase gives him this big build up, and then it's like, here he is, the ringmaster, and everyone just kind of goes, what the what?
And that was a you know, that name had been famously like trademarked by Vince for years. He just was waiting.
And this was going to be the guy.
And it also shows what Austin was. He was, again, kind of viewed as a great technician. He knew mm-hmm. how to wrestle. He knew how to do moves. And, good. It shows up. But he kind of showed up as looking like what he would eventually look like.
Yeah, when he first showed up as the ringmaster, he's kind of this hybrid of Stunning Steve and Stone Cold Steve Austin, because he's still got the Stunning Steve haircut, but he's just wearing the black trunks, and I think he had a vest on at that point.
I think, but
so it's this weird in-between area,
mm-hmm.
And he kind of languished as the ringmaster for a couple months.
Yeah.
But eventually DiBiase left to join the NWO.
Right.
And so he rebranded himself as Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Famously.
He was
once
just kind of like, look.
Yeah.
He just kind of went, look, I'm doing this now.
Yeah.
And really at the time, they couldn't.
I love sure that story. He credits his now one of his now ex-wives saying, you know, don't hurry up, drink your tea. It's going to get stone cold.
Mm-hmm. And he's like, hey, I like
light
that.
Bulb goes off.
Yeah. He had his really good kind of mini feud with Savio Vega.
Yeah.
You know, very, very underrated technical wrestler back in the day. And, you know, they had a Caribbean strap match that was actually quite good. And that's actually what storyline, at least, led to DiBiase's departure from the WWF.
Right.
So now he strikes out on his own.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just this loudmouth, rude, you know, I'll fight anybody, get out of my... He's always yelling, pointing his finger, and you know, and then comes King of the Ring.
Yeah.
And again, talking about things happening by accident. You know, originally Triple H was supposed to win.
Yeah.
And we'll get into all that at a later time. But
incident at Madison Square Garden.
Yeah, the curtain call happens. So he's on punishment. And they're like, well, okay, fine, give it to Austin. Here comes Austin 316, and you know, and boom. Like the next night, there's signs all over the arena of Austin 316.
Just catches on,
and he was still kind of getting. I mean, he was still a bit of a heel, kind of getting booed.
And again, back then, the classic heel face, you know, good guy rule breaker, good guy rule breaker. That's what we were taught to cheer for or boo growing up.
Yeah, there, you know, there was still that line.
Yeah,
but he started blurring it, and months kept going by, and people started getting behind him.
Yeah.
And then the feud that really brought him to prominence is he, Bret Hart was out on injury.
Yeah,
so Stone Cold comes out in an interview segment with his old Hollywood Blondes partner,
Pillman,
Ryan Pillman,
mm-hmm.
and Austin calls out Bret Hart.
Yeah.
And calls him all sorts of demeaning names and says, I kick his ass anytime and he's hiding from me and blah, blah, blah. And he beats the crap out of Pillman.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, oh, okay, well, now Bret.
Yeah.
Bret needs to come back. And, you know, this couple months went by, and Austin keeps calling him out and keeps calling him out. And then finally Bret, he comes back as Survivor Series, Madison Square Garden, They have a great match, continue their rivalry all the way up to WrestleMania 13, mm-hmm. a submission match with special guest referee Ken Shamrock.
That's right.
World's most dangerous man.
Wearing, I think I recall some tight, tight shorts or something like
Very
that.
Very tight shorts. Really, really uncomfortable.
Right.
And they have the submission match that first absolutely seals the show.
Right.
You know, no offense to Undertaker's Psycho Sid, who went on after that, but
right,
absolutely, and that's coming from a huge Undertaker fan. Like, right. Sorry, but
yeah,
no.
But you know, look, we can talk about the streak all you want, but there's been some doozies.
Yeah, oh yeah,
Giant Gonzalez.
Yeah. Oh God, Big Show and mm-hmm. that other dude. But no. So Bret and Austin have this amazing match that ends. Austin gets busted open. About halfway through, starts bleeding from his forehead, and Bret gets him in the sharpshooter. He's got blood dripping. It's that famous shot of him.
It's iconic.
Blood dripping down his face. He's screaming, mm-hmm. and he passes out in a pool of his own blood. Never actually gives up.
Right.
But, you know, of course, loses the match. And then they do the very rare double turn.
Yeah.
Because Bret then kind of loses his mind because he didn't actually beat Austin, so he starts beating on him, mm-hmm. and then Austin is, you know, he's the tough guy. He refuses help. He gets up. He walks to the back on his own, and at that point, Bret was the heel, and now Austin's the face.
Right.
And they kind of kept going at each other. Bret had his stable, the New Heart Foundation,
right.
where it wasn't just him and Neidhart. Now they'd been joined by
A returning bulldog,
Pillman. And a little brother Owen, and mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. Brian Pillman, and through that feud, we find ourselves at SummerSlam, 1997, right. Where he faces Owen Hart, and everything almost comes completely,
almost
to a
tragic
screeching
ending,
halt
with the misplaced pile driver there.
Yeah, yeah, he botches a tombstone mm-hmm. pile driver, gets dropped right on the top of his head, totally jacks his neck up,
mm-hmm.
Executes one of the worst small packages ever.
but that forces him to the sidelines.
Yeah. But Vince, in his mm-hmm. wisdom, keeps mm-hmm. him on TV.
Right.
You know, he's not wrestling, but he's there. He's raising hell. He will occasionally get physical, but you know, nothing
right.
He's not taking bumps. He's not, probably the highlight of that time is when they're having their first Raw live from Madison Square Garden
mm-hmm.
and Owen Hart's in the middle of the ring cutting this. It's a really great heel promo. I mean,
right.
it kind of gets overshadowed by what happened next, but mm-hmm. Owen, you know, as he was a fantastic wrestler, just, you know,
true loss. Yeah.
Yeah. But he's, you know, being a total jerk in the middle of the ring. Austin comes running after him, you know, jumps him from behind. Police swarm the ring, like mm-hmm. he's going to get arrested. And Vince McMahon, who again was not completely 100%, oh, by the way, I'm the boss, like he was still doing the announcer thing.
Yeah.
He was still Vince McMahon. He wasn't Mr. McMahon quite yet.
Yep.
He gets in the ring and he's like, Steve, you know, we know you want a piece in, but you know, you're not cleared to wrestle. You got to relax and, you know, we care about you, blah blah blah. And Austin's like, well, it's great. That I'm very happy that you care. It means a lot to me. Kiss my ass. And he stuns him in the middle of Madison Square Garden. And again, place goes
crazy,
bananas.
He's over.
Yeah,
at this point,
gets hauled off in cuffs, and just the, you know, everyone's like, okay, that is God now.
Mm-hmm.
he's the guy now.
Now by this point. Because the injury, and this is building, Austin's building, and is certainly now the leader of what's to come. But then let's go to the Montreal Screwjob, which I think kind of is the next chapter.
Yes.
And we'll come back to Austin and mm-hmm. where he kind of picks it up, I think. But that's Hart Michaels, and that story had been brewing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels, who had a legendary rivalry, you know, even way before Screwjob ever happened. You know, main event WrestleMania
as
12,
covered
the
in
Iron
the
Man.
WWE video,
yes,
which was interesting as well.
Yeah,
kind of painted Bret as a old bitter curmudgeon, though. I'll tell you that much. So that happens, and everyone knows the Screwjob story by now. Brett on his way out refuses to drop the title allegedly, or agrees to drop it the next night, and who knows. And nowadays people are just certain it was a work, mm-hmm. but at the time, and I was watching that pay-per-view live,
yeah.
chaos
ensued. It was like,
ensued.
What the hell just happened?
But I think the genius of that, and whether or not, again, mm-hmm. it seemed to happen just kind of naturally. This happens. Brett attacks Vince and spits in his face, and that's my yeah. image of the Montreal Screwjob.
Yeah,
is Vince
knocking the spit out of his hair, just kind of sounding like
out of his frozen
kid.
Hair. Yeah. Michael's being escorted to the back real quick, and mm-hmm. his fans, you're like, that what again? That feeling of what yeah. just happened, where WCW had created that about a year earlier or a year and a half earlier with the Outsiders coming in. Mm-hmm. Now WWF kind of has this going. Where, what did I just see? And then you tune in the next night, and pretty much Mr. McMahon is born.
Yeah, that's, yeah, it's
well,
born
he can't
of Mr.
hide
McMahon,
it anymore.
His famous Brett Screwed Brett speech.
Yeah.
Yeah, and propels Vince McMahon from, you know, the pretty, you know, unnoticed mm-hmm. announcer who yeah. gets really excited when big things are happening to the top heel in the company.
He
now,
becomes the focal point.
Yeah, he's the most hated man in the company.
And I think that's one of the often overlooked things when discussing the Attitude Era is we can start with Austin 316, Montreal Screwjob, DX. But what was the target of all these guys' kind of anger?
Yeah,
Mr. McMahon.
Yeah.
And Vince, in a great blurring of real life and character, becomes the ultimate heel that I think kind of carries the entire era. You're only as good as your bad guy, right, heroes?
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, he was absolutely the Lex Luthor to Austin mm-hmm. Superman.
Mm-hmm. That's a Batman reference, right?
That is. It's from okay. the Star Wars.
Okay.
And and yeah, I mean, you can look at really any match mm-hmm. that Austin had for the first year and a half after WrestleMania 14, year and a half, 2 years even, you mm-hmm. know, really until he left, you know, with his neck injury for mm-hmm. in SummerSlam, or no, Survivor Series, sorry. Anyone he was wrestling, it was an offshoot of this thing he has with McMahon.
Right.
You know, it starts as just the two of them, but it absolutely branches off.
So what point does Vince come on the air and give that speech about where he totally breaks the fourth wall and is Vincent Kennedy McMahon, chairman of WWF, hey, you're going to watch, some things are going to change. The stories are going to be a little. Remember he had that right before Raw, he comes on, and a lot of people said, well, kayfabe is officially dead. It died 25 years earlier. Dan Farron will tell you that. But
yes.
It was this moment of, oh, now we're watching something different. It yeah. was an acknowledgement of...
Yeah, it was like, by the way, this is all...
Put the kids yeah. to bed, you might see some puppies.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was kind of the first disclaimer, if you yeah. will. You know, there's the first TV-14, mm-hmm. if you will, where, yeah, where he's kind of, you know, things are gonna...
So that might be the official
yeah, maybe
start
that.
Date, but really, obviously, things fueled that.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to... Really, you know, when you're talking about the beginnings, mm-hmm. you know, you also have to pick out, when did it begin by accident?
Right.
And when did it begin where they're going, okay, now we're really doing
now
this stuff.
And by that point, you realize you've got something.
Yeah. Yeah, because by, you know, because in conjunction with the Survivors, mm-hmm. the Montreal Screwjob, you know, and which, of course, I mean, what a big night.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it. You have the next night is when Austin's still, you know, he's on the shelf, but he's still mm-hmm. coming. And you have Mr. McMahon and really leading up to ultimately their collision.
Yeah.
True, he had to go through Shawn Michaels first.
Yeah.
But,
which it takes into WrestleMania 14.
WrestleMania 14. Although I backtrack a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
The night after the Royal Rumble, mm-hmm. one of my biggest markout moments ever is when when they had Mike Tyson
right.
show up. Mike Tyson comes out on Raw. He had been at the Rumble in the stands, and he's brought out as, you know, Vince has this big announcement. And again, now Vince is the jerk. He's the mm-hmm. And Tyson's in there with his 20-person posse. Right. And then that glass breaks, and holy shit, here comes Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Right.
And I mean, I remember watching that just on the edge of my couch, like, oh my God, Stone Cold Steve Austin's going to fight Iron Mike Tyson. This is insane. And, you know, they get in that pull-apart ball, and you know, again, you're going, wait, I'm sorry, did Stone Cold just get into a fight with Mike Tyson? Are you kidding me?
Right.
And which then leads to Mike Tyson joining D-Generation X.
Right.
Shawn Michaels' stable with Triple H in China.
Can we pause a little bit and go into DX? Because they're forming by now, too. They're actually formed.
By this point, they've been formed because they formed out of necessity really during a feud with – Triple H was feuding with Mankind at the time. Then he joined up with HBK. Triple H in China interfered with during a match with HBK and Mankind. We're then also joined by Rick Rude.
Right.
Ravishing
Rude, with a beard at this point. Late Rick Rude, yeah.
Coming in as HBK's bodyguard.
Right.
And although he then also went back to WCW.
Famously as well. After a pre-tape.
Yes. But they join. It's HBK, it's Triple H, and it's China. Those are really the core. I mean, yes, Rude was there at the beginning, but
forgotten member.
The forgotten member. They're doing if Austin is doing the badass butt kicking thing, and they're the horribly inappropriate sexual innuendos.
Right.
There's the promo where Shawn Michaels was doing a interview segment with Sergeant Slaughter in the middle of the ring. He shoved a sock down his underwear and kept jumping up to make sure everyone saw his bulge as he's jumping. And
childish, and, juvenile,
yeah.
And the crowd loved
it. And, you know, again, bad guys getting great responses from the crowd. I remember once, it was during their feud with The Undertaker. I think it was after the Royal Rumble when Kane set Undertaker's coffin on fire. And they faked you out. Thought made you think it was the Undertaker. Then it's HBK, and they have this huge sausage, and just made so many, like, probably set the record for number of dick jokes in a 10-minute wrestling segment that has ever been made. They're certainly as integral to the Attitude Era because they're bringing the naughty. The dirty.
Ooh, there's some attitude out on my street there outside the Wrestling Viewpoint Network studios. Wow. Do you think DX, again, I fully acknowledge Austin as the leader of the Attitude Era.
Yeah.
Though, again, like you said, Vince McMahon as Mr. McMahon takes it a long way. Later on, you'd have The Rock and Mankind and all that stuff.
Yeah,
and Undertaker becoming this satanic, worshipping kind of guy. Again, stuff we're going to talk about later. But DX kind of... They kind of just infused that flavor of the Attitude Era.
Yeah, no, they definitely did. Because Austin was a face by this point. HBK was certainly after coming off of Montreal, HBK was full blown heel.
Right.
Coming off of that, and during his feud with The Undertaker, Triple H was segueing away from the snobbish aristocrat,
Hunter Hearst Helmsley
writing, with his writing crop and all that stuff,
which again is a giant testament to one of the key things I believe are to wrestling success, which is being able to evolve your character and yourself. Hunter Hearst Helmsley would have been a memory of the past. There would have been a Damian Demento one note joke.
Absolutely.
If Triple H hadn't become Triple H.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why I give him credit for who he is.
Absolutely.
I'm a fan. I say all you will about him marrying Stephanie and what he's doing or not doing now. I think it's actually positive. I actually look forward to what he can do with the Fed in his hands because he was just as integral to DX as Michaels and Billy Gunn and Road Dogg Jesse James. I mean, he was entertaining as the rest of them.
Oh yeah, no, once Brett and Shawn were gone,
yeah,
it basically, I'd say it goes Austin, Rock, I'd say Triple H. Yeah. You know, as big as Foley and Taker were, but I put Triple H up there. Certainly once he really became, you know, the big heel champion, started winning titles.
Again, especially when you're talking specifically Attitude Era and the flavor of that era, it's Triple H's snarky sense of humor, I think.
But I would say the best iteration of D-Generation X was when it was the three of them, when it was HBK, Triple H, and China.
Yeah.
Just because that's when they were so outrageous. They were so out there.
We can't forget X-Pac. I keep forgetting him.
We can forget X-Pac. Everyone's been trying to forget about X-Pac for years.
So what point do they go down to Atlanta and invade WCW's?
That's after WrestleMania 14.
Right. Okay. Let's get up to WrestleMania 14. I know we want to talk about that because that may be, though the Attitude Era spawned some of the greatest WrestleManias of all time. We're going to talk about WrestleMania 17, is what you believe is, and many believe, is the greatest WrestleMania of all time.
Yeah.
WrestleMania 14 might have been the one that was most associated with the beginning of the Attitude Era, though Austin Hart at 13 definitely was one of the iconic images of the beginning. It wasn't quite the Attitude Era yet.
Yeah, certainly.
14 was. So talk about that.
It's that debate of when does it start on purpose, when does it start by accident. It absolutely begins on purpose, WrestleMania 14, because that's when Austin is given the ball and said, Here you go, kid. Run with it.
As you say, and Ross proclaims the Austin era has begun.
Yeah, he's losing his Stone Cold. Right. Austin era has begun. And, you know, and the crowd's going insane. You know, Tyson punches out HBK, who we really don't see much of again for really until 2002. I mean, he comes back as commissioner from time to time.
Right, because he had suffered the back injury with Taker.
Yeah, back injury in the casket match at the Royal Rumble.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he was supposed to be done by that point.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing he came back in 2002, but, you know, that's a whole other thing.
A miracle for God to answer for. Side note of that, can you just imagine? One of the greatest things about the Attitude Era is the depth. Again, you have a once-in-a-lifetime wrestler in Austin. You have a once-in-a-lifetime wrestler in The Rock. You have a pretty damn good wrestler and character in Triple H, and all the and Undertaker and Foley and all the stuff going on. Could you imagine if you also throw in Michaels, 98, 99, 2000, if he had not got hurt?
Oh, God, if he'd stuck around, I mean, God only knows. Although, given many of his problems, he you know, he may have become a tragic footnote.
Right. In retrospect, I think it's the greatest thing for Shawn Michaels, the man, Michael Higginbotham, the man, that he went away at that time.
Yeah, probably did himself a hell of a lot
favor. But just fantasy wrestling booking standpoint.
Another thing, what if he stayed healthy, but let's say his contract had been up WrestleMania 14.
Right.
And then he jumps over to WCW.
Right.
Imagine that happened. Like, you know.
And by that time, too, though, it would have been interesting because by that time, WCW is becoming this, already by then, this bloated, confusing, high in their own success company.
Yeah.
Read the excellent book, The Rise and Fall of WCW. But anyways, WrestleMania 14, you have the main event. You have the Austin era beginning. And that's I like how you say that. That's kind of the we're going to start this now.
Yeah,
it's been building for a year or 2 years, but let's go now.
Yeah, it's like okay, this is happening, and then you go the very next night, in ring segment, Mr. McMahon interviewing Stone Cold Steve Austin, and as many of these segments, most of these segments for the next year and a half or so would end, they end with Vince McMahon on his back, the recipient of a Stone Cold Stunner, and it for a long time it never got old. Quite honestly, I don't know that it still has ever gotten old. It's one of those things where you know it's coming, and you're like, okay, when's he gonna hit him? When's he gonna hit him? He's totally gonna hit him. When's he gonna hit him?
What I love about the Stunner is Seth Skyfire, the trainer for Millennium Pro Wrestling, now who will continue to work with that group in a capacity, whatever they become. He has a great thing to say, because if wrestling was real, then you would all use the Stunner every time you entered a ring.
Absolutely.
Because it's clearly the most devastating maneuver of all time.
That's the one that puts you out forever. Yeah.
If you wanted to really be realistic, because a lot of people coming up in the wrestling business want to be, well, that doesn't make sense, and they try to throw some terms out that they've learned on message boards. And it's like, well, if anything, nothing makes sense, because if something made sense in wrestling, everyone would just stun everybody the entire match. That'd be it.
Yeah, every match would just be a race of who can hit the stunner
if
first.
If you have this nuclear bomb in your pocket, you're going to use it every time, and that's the stunner.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that was the thing that everyone was waiting for. I only went to one live event during this magical time. Actually, I've only been to one live WWF event ever. It was a week or two before his SummerSlam match against The Undertaker. They were the tag team champions facing New Age Outlaws at the Anaheim Pond.
Oh, very good.
And I mean, he hits that stunner, I believe on Badass Billy Gunn, and the place went nuts.
Yeah,
I mean, it had been loud enough when you first hear that glass shatter and everyone gets up. That was loud enough, but the second that stunner hit, it was just, oh my God, this is the greatest thing we've ever seen.
And I think, too, and that's another byproduct of the Attitude Era and the appeal of the Attitude Era. Before then, people had finishers, clearly.
Yeah.
But none of them, even HBK's Sweet Chin Music, it was by that point his move. But even back in 92, 93, it wasn't like, here it is, and the crowd pops. Oh, yeah.
No,
and then you have the stunner and how Steve Austin does it and the pop that comes with it. That's been a drug everyone's been trying to take from this point on.
Yeah.
Jericho, when he created the Codebreaker, was like, I needed that quick, sudden pop move to finish. So that's one of the influences to me of the Attitude Era is having that, boom, there it is, pop.
Yeah, that finisher that just comes out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And the second you hit it, you're like, done. There's the RKO, something like that, where it's just like the second he hits it, you're like, oh, all right.
Yeah. And I don't think it's ever been perfected as much as that.
No. And no.
Simple.
Maybe the people's elbow. But I don't think anything else really gets that, oh, my God,
with the people's elbow, it's a production.
Yeah.
And it's entertaining.
And
it's an elbow.
And it doesn't always get the job done. Austin hit you with the stunner, unless your name was The Rock and it was WrestleMania 19.
Right.
Austin hit you with the stunner, you're done.
That's it.
People have kicked out of the people's elbow. People have kicked out of I didn't even mean people's elbow. I meant the rock bottom.
Well, the rock bottom, move. The rock bottom. Yeah. But again,
people can kick out of that, and it's.
I would associate the people's elbow more with the rock than the rock bottom.
Yeah,
more
definitely.
People say that's what ends it.
Yes, but nothing like that stunner hit, and especially when it was on McMahon. Like, what? They got a good year and a half out of just us watching Stone Cold Steve Austin mess with Vince McMahon. And just ruin him.
Right.
I mean, he poured concrete into his Corvette.
Yeah.
There's the beer bath. The one of my favorites, although in hindsight, it's incredibly stupid, was when Austin pulled out a gun and held it to Vince's head and pulled the trigger. A little flag comes out, says "Bang 316," and then Vince stands up, is like, "Haha, he just peed his pants." Like, that's
right.
I mean,
nowadays that would not go. And also the Austin and Pillman inside Pillman's house.
Yeah, where Austin breaks in and Pillman's got a gun.
Gunplay involved
too. You hear the shot, and then it all goes. I was like, wait, did Pillman just shoot Stone Cold Steve Austin? I mean. That was before, but
different era in society as well.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah, that wouldn't happen now.
No, it wouldn't happen. So we're wrapping up episode one here shortly. So we got a lot more to talk about in terms of Austin and The Rock and his development.
Yeah,
because at this point he's part of the Nation of Domination.
Yes.
In 96, he's Rocky Maivia.
Oh,
that doesn't work out famously. DX kind of maybe takes over as kind of the leader of the Attitude Era by 98, 99, we're moving on. From the early era, from the early years of the Attitude Era, which we're calling, let's call 96, 97, 98 was 14.
98 was
14.
WrestleMania 14, yeah.
What to you stands out as some of the more, your favorite moment the epic, iconic moments.
Gosh. I mean, of course, Austin 316 jumps mm-hmm. to mind. Mm-hmm. And his matches with Brett. I liked when he had to team, when it was Austin and HBK mm-hmm. as mm-hmm. the tag champs, you know, and they were doing the classic, they can't get along thing. Right. But, you know, I think they worked so well together. A lot of the DX skits, where they're pulling off and, you know, being all raunchy. And I saw way too much of Shawn Michaels, but
for me, one of the, you mentioned already, but when I think Attitude Era and it flashes quickly in my brain, it's them and constantly harassing Sergeant Slaughter.
Yeah. Sergeant Slobber, as they called him.
Wearing the masks with the little windshield wipers on it and that kind of stuff. That stands out. For me, that image of McMahon with a spit in his head,
in
his hair, because that to me, I think back to it like as a fan, it was like, what is going on? And now when I tune in, anything can happen.
Yeah,
and that to me is what the Attitude Era was always about: is anything can happen, anything outrageous can be said, anything outrageous can be done. Sable can show up with barely any clothes on.
And High School Joe was a big fan of that. And again, Austin Tyson. I mean that conference. The Austin being dragged out of the ring as Vince McMahon screams, "You ruined it! You ruined everything!"
Would you say that is more powerful of a lasting image or memory than the actual punch of Michaels at WrestleMania 14?
Yeah. Yeah.
I would think so too.
Yeah, no, because quite frankly, at that point, you know, no one. I mean, people would have liked to see HBK fight Mike Tyson, but just the way Austin was presented at that point, it really was like, wow, these are the two most dangerous dudes on the planet. No disrespect to Ken Shamrock,
right?
I want to see these two tear each other apart. It was, you know, the punch with HBK was very satisfying, certainly.
Sure.
Because certainly he was, you know, one of the great heels of all time. I mean, we hated him by then. But no, I think if you have to pinpoint Tyson's involvement and look at one, it's that pull apart brawl with Austin on Raw.
It got such great coverage because by WrestleMania, again, right before 14, that's a great moment. But I think the first appearance of Tyson was, again, one of those what's happening moments.
Yeah.
And so that melee, which was covered by all the major sports outlets and even still done as though wrestling was wrestling, and ESPN's kind of snickering at the same time, you're kind of like,
because, you know, Tyson was, quote unquote, a real person.
Yeah.
You know, this was an outside. You know, I mean, whenever somebody else comes down, you know he's getting to a fight because they're wrestlers and that's what they do.
Right, right. Or even looking to the last few years, I forget how long ago it was now, but Floyd Mayweather and Big Show.
Yeah, I mean.
By that point, everyone. Yeah,
that point, you know, it's like, oh, they're going to do something with Floyd and Big Show. This will be interesting to watch.
That's cool. But this was like, whoa.
Yeah, this was Tyson. Tyson at the height of his nuttiness, like, you know, he was a few. I don't think he'd bitten off Evander Holyfield's ear yet, but you know he was out of jail and he was that guy. So you didn't know it was
predictable.
Yeah, so you didn't know what he was going to do, and then here comes Austin, who you never knew what he was going to do except beat somebody up. Mm-hmm. And so you're like, wait, but that's Mike Tyson. He can't be about to beat up Mike Tyson,
and
is he?
That for me, looking at the early era of the Attitude Era, the early years. The first part of it, I should say, that pull apart, Tyson's involvement may be the thing that got it to the next level.
Yeah.
Because that was the one, you know, the other things were all internal to the business.
Mm-hmm.
Austin 316, the screw job and everything. But this was the first thing that transcended it. And that's what makes it successful.
Yeah.
It's the next level. So that's what we'll be picking up next time from that era on. This has been a great talk about the history of the Attitude Era, when it began, the stars, the early memories, and a mention of Savio Vega.
Absolutely.
So,
Los Boricuas.
Los Boricuas. So for Joe Ruggiero, I'm Ken Napsok. That has been Attitude Era Episode 1 on the Wrestling Viewpoint Network. Again, don't forget to follow us on Twitter. WrestlingVN is the handle, @WrestlingVN. And write us, WrestlingViewpoint@WrestlingViewpoint.com. gmail.com, and we also have a Facebook page, as everyone does these days. But find us on there, like us, and write us, and let us know what you thought about the Attitude Era. What were your favorite memories, and where do you think the Attitude Era officially began? So until next time, for Joe, I'm Ken. This has been the Wrestling Viewpoint Network.